We'll talk about the Saints after the 2-1 start, about the injury to, Eric McCoy. We spoke with Dr. David Elias, an orthopedic surgeon with Ortho LA. You can download the Odyssey app, use the rewind feature, and while he, didn't know exactly about Eric McCoy, he did talk about the nature of that groin injury surgery, and it sounded pretty painful, I'll tell you what. So we'll talk with Bobby about that. But right now we are joined by Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. How you doing, Wilson?
Doing well. How are you all this morning?
I'm okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. Tell me your thoughts after the UCLA game.
About LSU just broadly? It's a team that is still trying to figure things out.
I'm picking your brain, Wilson.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a team that's still trying to figure things out at the moment. You know, they've got issues on the defensive side of the ball in terms of giving up explosive plays. And obviously in that game, Harold Perkins goes down. So all of a sudden this team is without its most athletic defensive player, really one of the most athletic defensive players in all of college football. Even if Harold hadn't had a great season to this point, that's still a blow to this team and a devastating for Perkins himself too. And, you know, on the offensive side, they're a little bit further ahead, but they've still got some issues they got to iron out too, especially in terms of being able to run the ball on short yardage situations, something they've wanted to do and haven't been able to a consistent level yet to this point. And so they're a team that's, still got hasn't necessarily inspired like a ton of confidence yet, I think, in the fan base going into really after the bye week next week and going into Ole Miss. You know, the SEC schedule is going to pick up, and LSU's got to keep working on some things so that it can be competitive in those SEC games and end up having the kind of season that it would like to.
I'm no Wilson Alexander, but my take on Brian Kelly is that LSU is a lot closer than maybe it may seem, and he knows that. It's hard to tell. You know, a coach has to be positive, right? But I just sense, reading between the lines, that maybe this LSU team has a lot more to deliver, and while you say they're trying to figure themselves out, that Brian Kelly, again, reading between the lines and trying to be a mind reader here, thinks that they're pretty close. Thoughts?
Well, you know, we talked to Whit Weeks. It reminds me of something Whit Weeks told us after the game against UCLA when we were talking to him about some of the defensive breakdowns that they've had, mistakes that Brian Kelly called maddening in the first half. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is all contained within that game anyway, to the first half. And Weeks said, yeah, that's what's frustrating about it, is that we know we have players who are good enough. We have talent. We have, you know, skill. We have good coaches. And yet we're still having some of these sorts of, issues. And Brian Kelly just kind of usually refers to them as sort of mental lapses there in the first half, where things that he has continued to say this season are correctable. And I think that's what's most frustrating to him, is because he does think this can be a good football team, but it's having mistakes that he views as very correctable and things that are avoidable, and that they're still kind of happening. And so it seems like he's been frustrated by that. Again, this is all sort of psychoanalysis in some ways, but it does seem like he thought that this team maybe wouldn't be having some of those sort of mental mistakes, especially at this point of the year, and that he's trying to, that's kind of the thing that he's having to coach around right now, is sort of, okay, these things are still happening. What do we have to do as coaches to get this team, you know, really ready going into the thick of the schedule?
I know whether you're a coach or a parent or a manager at work or whatever it is, there's nothing more frustrating than knowing what's going to happen, telling somebody what's going to happen, telling them what they have to do to keep it from happening. Do you understand what you have to do to keep it from happening? Yes. So you get it, right? Yes. And then when it comes time to prevent that from happening, they don't do it. And that can just be, as Brian Kelly said, maddening.
Yeah, it absolutely can. And, you know, as in college, you're dealing that with a lot on every team. It's 18 to 22-year-olds who you're trying to get to do things a certain way. And Brian Kelly in particular is very specific about how he thinks, wants things done within his program. It's all, you know, he preaches accountability all the time. They have to sell these wellness questionnaires every day before noon. And he has always been of the mind that those things are going to help lead to success. And while he says that this is his most accountable team that he's had in terms of filling out those things and doing those things off the field, and that he has seen a shift off the field in terms of how they're playing, which usually in the year three of his program ends up helping kind of lead to a nice jump there in the program and the trajectory of it, it hasn't quite translated to the on-the-field stuff this year yet. And that's what they're still trying to get to, because, you know, he keeps telling them, like, you can do these things, you can be a good team, and so he's kind of having to maybe what he expected coming into the year hasn't quite been there, and he's trying to help coach this team to get it to that point.
Tell me about these wellness questionnaires. What is that?
So that's something that Kelly implemented back at Notre Dame and brought here to LSU. It's every morning the players have to complete a series of questions. They say it takes about a minute. It's sort of about their sleep, how they slept like the night before, some of the things they're feeling, just kind of like a daily little check-in in that regard. And what Kelly, it gives them some data and especially the strength staff and the nutrition staff, some information on how players are feeling so that they can adjust some things. But it also kind of just, in Kelly's mind, breeds accountability. You know, his sort of thing is that if you can't do this stuff, then why can we trust you on the field? And so they're supposed to complete those every single day. And they've gotten up to a point now where, you know, they're doing that on a regular basis, and which is a good sign for Kelly in terms of what he wants to see, in terms of sort of how players are handling themselves off the field, in order to make sure that they can be trusted on the field.
Let's talk about Harold Perkins, and he's gone for the season. Is he gone from LSU? Let's start there, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, he hasn't decided yet, and Brian Kelly was asked about that this week. You know, is he leaving? And Kelly said it's premature to have any of those sorts of discussions. Talking to some NFL draft analysts this week about what Harold's outlook is now in terms of the NFL, they say that he's still probably a top 50 pick or, like, you know, day two, second day, you know, kind of pick, like basically a second round pick of some sort. Coming into the season, he was being projected as a late first rounder, but that was also kind of dependent on the kind of production he had this season. There's still a lot of questions about what his position would be at the next level. And so there's, you know, Harold is still in a position where he could get drafted pretty high there, especially if you're a top 50 pick. That's usually a place where you should probably, you know, go and go ahead and go to the NFL. But, you know, he's going to have a decision to make now that isn't necessarily crystal clear. If in his mind he wants to be an early first-round pick, now that probably wouldn't happen. And so he's still going to have to make that decision, though, and he's got about 4 months to do that. And so there probably won't be anything, you know, anytime soon about what his next plans will be.
In this day and age, it's so hard to keep track of. Some of these guys are in school for 7-8 years, you know, married with kids. I don't know what the hell's going on. He's a junior. He's in his third year. Could he get a medical redshirt for this or not, or is that on the table at all?
Yeah, he could. I mean, he only played in 4 games. It's not something that I think would necessarily apply too much to Harold, because this isn't a guy who you're expecting anyway to be here for like 5 years.
Right.
You know, even if he were to come back, you know, you wouldn't expect him to then come back the year after that. You know, yes, technically he could apply for a medical redshirt or even just a regular redshirt, because he's never had one of those, and gain an extra year of eligibility. But with someone with his talent, you're not expecting them to take a redshirt, because he's probably not going to be at LSU, you know, long enough for that to apply.
Let's talk about the other part of the LSU. First of all, how does this change not having to account for Harold Perkins, how other teams prepare for LSU in the defense?
Brian Kelly was asked about that this week, and he said how, you know, no matter where he was, how he was playing, like, teams had to game plan for him, and quarterbacks had to look for him pre-snap and find out where he was on the field, and that element gets taken away. Again, Harold had only had 17 tackles this year, 1.5 tackles for loss, no sacks, but there was so much potential there to turn into more, to take a step forward, and now we don't get to see if that was ever going to happen this season, to become the disruptive player that everybody knows he can be, and for the last 2 years, LSU's been trying to kind of, you know, get that out of him, put him in the right spot for that to happen, and it hasn't always been put in the right spot for that to happen, and all that. And so, you know, teams are it takes away somebody who's extremely athletic, can get after the passer, who we all know has the ability to make game-changing plays. And so it certainly is a blow to LSU's defense. You're talking about taking the most talented player off the field, really. And so LSU's going to have to adjust. You're going to see probably more of West Weeks at linebacker when LSU wants to play 3 linebackers. You're also going to probably see them switch up their formation a little bit, go back to what they call the 4-2-5, and use Major Burns at the star position as in a way to kind of adjust moving forward. Because now, you know, moving forward without Harold is certainly a change to the entire dynamic of the season.
It is a game of adjustment and counter-adjustment, obviously. How big of a difference maker is this for Blake Baker and moving people around? And is it going to be some experimentation going on against South Alabama to get ready for Ole Miss? That's the way this plays out?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, you kind of got this whole first month of the season, college coaches are, if they haven't already figured it out in the preseason, you know, first month in particular, you're trying to understand your personnel. Because college coaches, you know, you try to have an idea, you know, of what you got going into the year. but you really find out as you start to play games. And so, you know, that kind of was the thing here. You know, LSU's got a month before really going into the thick of its SEC schedule, starting with that big game against Ole Miss. And this is the last chance to do that here against South Alabama. You know, is there any experimentation that they want to get done? Is there anybody who they really want to get a test of how they look? You know, that'll probably happen in this game. At the same time, though, LSU can't do too much of that, because this is a South Alabama team that could, you know, has played really well, especially on offense the last couple of weeks. And, you know, so LSU has got to be able to play its best. Otherwise, you know, it can get hairy there in Tiger Stadium on Saturday nights. But they're still probably going to try to, you know, figure out a little bit, especially I think in the secondary at safety, who can they rely on as they move forward.
Yeah, linebacker is not a really deep position for LSU, right?
No, it's not. You've got the three sort of players who are going to be in the rotation right now, which are the Weeks brothers and senior Greg Penn. And then it's three true freshmen, and none of them have played a defensive snap yet in terms of scholarship players. And, you know, that's Xavier Atkins, Talon Singleton, and Devon Keyes. And, again, none of them have played a defensive snap yet. But Kelly said that Xavier Atkins would possibly be activated now to be one of the kind of primary backups. But it's still somebody who has never actually played a defensive snap in college yet.
Let's talk about, before we take a break and then move over to the offensive side of the football, corners and safeties. What the hell's going on there?
Well, a lot of rotation at safety. LSU still seems to be trying to figure things out of that position. It's the one that's most in flux right now on the defense. They've got a bunch of guys rotating. Like I said, it's, you know, Major Burns, it's Jordan Allen, it's Jordan Gilbert, Sage Ryan, Deshaun Spears, a freshman. So they've got, and now with Major Burns probably going back to the star position, you really got kind of four guys in that rotation nobody has really sort of like asserted themselves as a super reliable player who needs to be playing like every down. And so they're still trying to figure things out there. Deshaun Spears, though, the freshman, has started the past two games. And then at corner, you know, Zy Alexander suffered a concussion against UCLA, and so his status is questionable for South Alabama. But as he's coming off of an ACL injury, he looks like one of their starters alongside Ashton Stamps. There's a little bit more stability there at corner. But as Brian Kelly has said, they don't necessarily have two guys who they can just play every single play. So J.K. Johnson's getting some playing time out there, as well as P.J. Woodland, one of the freshmen. But really, you know, Ashton Stamps has definitely solidified himself as a starter, and he's got a guy who's got some of the most snaps on the field this season.
So I guess I'm wondering, how can it go from, I'm not the first guy to say this, from DBU to DB who?
Well, it's been recruiting over the years, recruiting misses, losing guys. Really, after Corey Raymond left, LSU was having a really tough time getting top recruits to come. And you know, those really high four-star, five-star guys. And you started to see that change in the 2025 class, especially with five-star DJ Pickett being committed. Now that Corey Raymond has come back, the recruiting seems to have improved. But that's kind of why it dropped off at the end of the Ed Orgeron era there. I think a bunch of guys transferred. And the guys who came in just haven't been at the same level that LSU is accustomed to seeing. And so recruiting is going to have to be the thing that returns them to that DBU status.
Yeah, and you know, you watch a game. We'll take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back about DBU, LSU quarterback. You, when you look at Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow dueling out on Monday Night Football, two Heisman Trophy winners. But that got me to thinking about Garrett Nussmeier and who's behind him. And Garrett's looked good. But it's just, you know, one play away from disaster, and you got to wonder what's going on behind Garrett Nussmeier. And also we'll talk about running backs, wide receivers, and more offensive line when we return with Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. Any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. It's the Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text line. I'll pass them along when we come back. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us, talking LSU football. Then later on, we'll talk to the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, here on WWL. 928, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. We're going to move over to the offensive side of the football. Then we'll talk to Bobby Hebert later on this hour, co-host. You know who Bobby Hebert is, about the Saints season and more. So when Garrett Nussmeier limped off against Nicholls, you know, my immediate question is, what happens now? He was okay. He came back. But you know how it works, Wilson. You're always just, and I'm not, shouldn't say this because I don't. Joe Buck the other night on Monday Night Football, after a guy missed a field goal, said, you know, he hadn't missed in 29 times, but I didn't say that before, so don't blame it on me. And I know what I say here has nothing to do with anything, and I hope to God Garrett Nussmeier is healthy and happy for the rest of his life. But God forbid if something should happen, where does LSU stand at quarterback behind him?
Well, it's either Ricky Collins or A.J. Swan, and Ricky Collins came in through, actually completed the pass when Garrett Nussmeier went out for a moment earlier this season, but it's still a little bit unclear exactly, you know, who would play if LSU had to do something, like, long-term. You know, Garrett's injury was, like, some, like, if Garrett had an injury that caused him to, like, miss multiple weeks or something like that, because there was some discussion there, according to the broadcast crew, that A.J. Swan is probably going to redshirt this season, and so LSU might not want to activate him. But if, you know, all of a sudden Garrett was going to miss like half the year in this hypothetical scenario where everybody should be knocking on wood, A.J. Swan, you know, maybe would get activated in that. But it's still kind of like in flux week to week exactly like who the backup is. Again, I think in a Ricky Collins is probably the most likely to enter in like a brief scenario so that they can get A.J. a red shirt. It would have to be a, you know, something where Garrett was missing a significant amount of time, I think, for that to probably change.
But to be clear, there is nobody close to Garrett Nussmeier behind him.
No, not at this moment. Ricky Collins needs a lot more development. So does A.J. Swan. Ricky has certainly improved from what we saw last year in practices. His throwing motion looks cleaner, sharper, making better decisions. But Garrett is right now playing at a level that's making him one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. And potentially over the course of the year, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I mean, he's tied for second in the country in touchdown passes right now with 13. And there is nobody else in this roster. Nobody who could replicate what he's doing right now.
Let's talk about wide receiver. What's going on there?
Well, you know, Chris Hilton might return this week after missing the first four games. He's really been out for about 5 weeks now with an ankle injury. And he warmed up against UCLA, but didn't actually end up playing. Brian Kelly said it was a game-time decision. He wasn't really ready to go yet, but this could finally be the week where he returns. And if so, as Kelly said, this could give LSU a little bit more of a vertical threat. The one thing that it hasn't quite had in the passing game is consistent downfield ability to throw the football. And not that it's Garrett lacking for arm talent. We all know that's not the case. He threw a beautiful pass to Kyle Parker down the right sideline, 45-yard touchdown that UCLA game. And we've seen it throughout his career. But, you know, LSU's wide receivers, none of them have the speed that Hilton has vertically down the field. And so right now, Nussmeier is 9 of 20 on passes thrown more than 20 yards downfield. And Chris Hilton might be able to change that. Outside of him, Aaron Anderson has had a fantastic start to the season, emerged as someone who else you can trust, one of Garrett's go-to receivers. Karen Lacy's had a couple of drops, but has otherwise been pretty good, and especially in key moments as someone who Garrett looked for. C.J. Daniels has done some decent things so far. Xavier Thomas has been involved. But really, when you talk about the receivers, you have to also talk about Mason Taylor, the tight end, who leads the team with 25 receptions at the moment. Is putting together right now what could be the best season by a tight end in LSU history, and certainly deserves quite a bit of recognition.
He is a stud. Talking about what's going on in running back, have we sorted any of that out? Still going to be committed?
Well, not really. Still going to be by committee. You know, it seemed like Caden Durham would be more involved against UCLA after what he did against South Carolina. And then Josh Williams ends up having 13 carries for a little over 60 yards and a touchdown. And Josh played pretty well. You know, so you can understand why maybe LSU would kind of in some ways ride the hot hand. But Caden Durham showed on the 35-yard touchdown catch in the second half what he can do when he touches the football. He's done something good pretty much every time he touches the football, especially the last 2 weeks. So you'd expect him to become more of this part of this rotation, begin to get more touches and workload moving forward. We know they have a lot of trust in Josh. And he was doing some things against UCLA in terms of moving the pile, turning his feet, picking up extra yardage. But Caden is a little bit different in terms of his speed and what he can do when he gets out in space in particular. And so, you know, Caleb Jackson showed some good things, too, against UCLA there in the second half. A few nice runs, just sort of being a little bit more physical than he had been the first few weeks. So it's certainly going to be those three guys moving forward. But Caden Durham, I think, will only continue to carve out more of a role within that rotation.
And, you know, you talk about Caden Durham, and I got a sense of Harold Perkins' voo in a way here in terms of you got a guy here, but you're not going to use him, and then we're going to start fooling around. And do you understand what I'm trying to say, Wilson?
No, could you
Well, I guess what I'm saying is Harold Perkins Jr., like in freshman year, was like crazy, right? Like just going all over the place, disruptive, making plays, then decided to start tinkering around. It's like you had an asset and you didn't use it, then you decided to use it a different way. Unfortunately, he gets injured. Seems like with Caden Durham, you find your guy, but now you're going to find a reason not to use him. Or
Yeah, you know, it has kind of happened a few times now. Like last year, you think about sort of a similar thing with Whit Weeks, where, you know, he was having this great freshman year where he saw, like, wow, he's making a difference because he's just playing with his hair on fire, even if he isn't sometimes a little bit out of position. And then he would get taken off the field, even though he was the one who was really making most of a difference. And that whole defense was broken. But it was still kind of a similar sort of thing. You know, when it comes to freshmen in particular, Brian Kelly obviously hasn't been afraid to play freshmen. Go back to his first year, LSU was starting four of them. But also in times when he has said in the past, if he thinks everything else is equal, then he's going to take the guy with the most experience. And that might be kind of what you're seeing at running back here too. Josh Williams is a guy who's a sixth-year senior who LSU trusts in a lot of different ways, especially pass protection and kind of being that third-down back. But as Caden Durham continues to prove to the staff that he can handle more, he'll probably get on the field more. But it is kind of unusual that, okay, this guy just almost rushed for 100 yards in his SEC debut and then wasn't as heavily involved a week later. Was kind of strange. And so it's just something to continue to kind of watch here for a little bit. If it's kind of similar against South Alabama, I think people will really be scratching their heads because, again, he had a 35-yard touchdown catch there against UCLA, and he's done nothing but, you know, make plays since he's gotten on the field the last couple of weeks.
And you mentioned the broadcast team. I heard them mention that, you know, Caden Durham could be on the LSU track team, which is a pretty good track team. So there's no substitute for speed, and he handles the ball well, so I don't know. We'll see. Thank you, Wilson. I appreciate your insights and your time.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you again soon.
Hey,
you too. Wilson Alexander, LSU beat writer for The Advocate. When we come back, we're talking to Cajun Cannon. Bobby Hebert, man, I love talking to that guy. 9:35, 25 till 10, traffic, WWL. 9:43, 17 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by the Cajun Cannon. Bobby Hebert, talk about the Saints season so far. How you doing, Bobby?
All right, Tommy, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm glad the hurricane's going to the right.
I was just looking at a tweet from somebody from Florida State saying an exact thing because Tallahassee's pretty much in the crosshairs, but it's a big storm, and they're saying it's going to affect a lot of areas. And I was wondering about the Tampa Bay game on Sunday. They host, I forgot who it is, but I guess they'll get it.
Yeah, I want to say, they'll get it in by Sunday. I should have remembered that because I think it's a significant game. Yeah, the Eagles. Yeah, and the Eagles are beat up. Look, their two top receivers are out, and everyone's dealing with injuries. Tommy, look at the 49ers. They're like a mass unit.
You know,
all of a sudden, I was thinking like Christian McCaffrey.
That's what I was thinking of, too, with Christian McCaffrey and comparing that to Alvin Kamara and talking about who got paid and who didn't. And I'm thinking, you know what, AK is still playing, right?
Yeah, he's still playing. And to show you that it's much more than we think or they let on the public, they're sending him to Germany to get treatment. Whether some not FDA approved or stem cell, I don't know what it is, but that sounds like a serious calf injury if you're going all the way to Germany to get that fixed. So
let's talk about
the Saints have injuries too. So
yeah, that game on Sunday was hard hitting. Eagles, like you're saying, put some people on injured reserve as well. That was one of the harder hitting games you've seen in a while.
Yeah, especially in the trenches, and the Saints were even fortunate to be in that game. Mm. But you know, you can have ugly wins. You know, like you always say the cliche, like, "Boy, we could have stole that game." Because really, the Eagles deserve to win. I always look at how they won in the trenches, on the offensive and defensive line. But we had an opportunity at the end. I tell you what, if we'd have beat the Eagles, they might have fired the head coach after the game.
After that decision-making. Man.
Yes. I mean, like, what in the world? But, think how meaningful come of Sunday. And just really the next 3 weeks, and I can say 2 out of 3 weeks, I realistically look at, we beat the Chiefs, great. They're the Super Bowl champs. They're trying to go for three-peat on Monday night. But if you can tell me right now we lose to the Chiefs and beat Atlanta and Tampa Bay when they come to the Dome, we'd be 3-0 in the NFC South. Think about all that momentum. And I don't know, I look at Vegas, where they have the Falcons like a 1.5-point favorite, so you have a flip a coin, you know, their center's out, our center's out. And I always look at this, Tommy, that it seems like what Atlanta are, in general, even college, like rivalry-type games, it doesn't matter if the Saints are good and the Falcons aren't, or vice versa. When you get a rivalry-type game, I almost look at that, that it's a split. And I always say, to win the NFC South, Now, ultimately, you want to go undefeated, if not 5-1. But if you 4-2, you're in the hunt. So obviously, you want to kick Carolina while they're down, split with Atlanta, split with Tampa Bay, at the least. And then you 4-2, then you have a chance to win your division, host a playoff game. But we've always played well in Atlanta, so it's going to be interesting. Again, what's going to happen in the trenches? I think that's a major loss for the Saints of McCoy. He's our best lineman, and we had questions about our line in August. And so, I mean, it was kind of what we expected would happen against Philadelphia compared to the first two games. But you got to give Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator, a lot of credit. They were not going to let the Saints run against them. Mm-hmm. And so that they, you know, that game could be won or lost in the trenches. And even though, like I said, Atlanta's out with their center, if you look at overall, that was kind of considered one of their strengths. The Falcons have a better offensive line than the Saints. So I look at right now, it doesn't matter when you play a team, who's playing, who's available, who's healthy and all that. I think if the Saints win in Atlanta, it'll be an upset. Now, what does that mean? You win by a field goal, you just got to win. We don't have to crush nobody and score 40 points. But, you know, you got to just, you know, break down the season. And we used to always do this with 16 games, like four quarters. And I said this in August. If we could be 3-3 to start the season, I still would be optimistic. And right now, since the way we beat Dallas and started the season, even though how we lost to the Eagles, I'd be disappointed if we're not like a 4-2 type team.
Yeah, I think people need to pay attention to what's important and not get so involved with Kansas City and realize that, and I know you know this, but about why Atlanta and Tampa Bay are so much more important. Like, if you're going to lose one out of the three, lose the game to Kansas City, not the other two.
Yeah, because it's the AFC. That's why to kick off the season, I said it was a must-win, even though it was week one. Carolina, it's like 2-for-1. Mm-hmm. You know, you start out 1-0 in the, you know, in the NFC South. And the one thing now that's bad about losing to the Eagles, because you never know how the season's going to unfold, you lose the tiebreaker to them, because that's the conference game, that's the NFC. So, yeah, in theory, if you're going to lose games during the season, obviously, you know, who that nation would want to win them all. But you lose those AFC games and win those NFC or divisional games, because that's where it's going to put you where you want to be at the end of the season.
Tell me about DeMario Davis. We know anything about him? Injury-wise.
I don't know, Tom. Yeah, injury-wise, I know in that long run by Saquon Barkley, you know, he came back in the game, if I can recall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he got lost in the wash. He took a bad angle. So did Lattimore on that play that they made Saquon look like he was on a different level. But Saquon Barkley is a special running back, and you saw that. I don't know why the hell the Giants let him go. But DeMario Davis, I still think he has a lot left in the tank, but, you know, you look how fast Cam Jordan has fallen. He's not even in the top two defensive ends right now. He's in the rotation. You know, he went from playing, when we always counted on Cam Jordan, to high 80s or 90% of the snaps, to right now he's like about 25% of the snaps. And then DeMario Davis, I still think, has a lot left, and he'll finish strong. But if you're dealing with an injury, that makes you old really fast, mm-hmm. especially when you can't run like you want to run. So I don't know the extent of injury. That would be a good question come right for the game, and I'm sure Deuce can find out some scoop with that. Because we need DeMario Davis, the quarterback of the defense, the captain and all that stuff. And we need him to be ready to roll, because he's a big part what we do defensively, and not only the leadership, but his physical ability. The two players that have played outstanding, I think, on defense, and you can see the young one, and now the one that's a veteran, is Carl Granderson. Oh. Carl Granderson is amongst the best in the whole NFL, every down defensive end. And then Brian Brzee, what he's done in interior. Now, there's something he can get better against the run, but he is disruptive as a pass rusher. So they have played at a high level. I think Alante Taylor's been very active. We need Marshawn Lattimore to be more impactful, you know, not now that he's back. But it's going to be a challenge against Atlanta. You know, from a national perspective, everyone says, oh, Atlanta's going to win the division. I'd say, well, they're kind of disregarding Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay has won it three straight seasons. And look at the start that they got to. But then Sean Payton spank them. But it seems like Sean Payton and his teams in his office, he's always had success against Tampa Bay teams. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that trend there, so I don't know, Tom, it is wide open in the NFC. Think about this. You might say, well, the 49ers are still maybe the team to beat, but they are so beat up. Mm-hmm. And the Rams are so beat up. And then the Rams upset them last week. And speaking of the Rams, we're not going to have McCoy back until December the 1st when we mm-hmm. play the Rams. So that's basically 8 games, 2 months. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but you got to take it one game at a time. And I'm telling you, this is, again, like a playoff game like Carolina was to start of the season, because boy, it'd be awesome to win at Atlanta and start out 2-0 in the NFC South.
You know it's going to come down to a field goal. It seems like it always does.
Right. And both kickers can make a 50-yard. So we just need to be in that position. Koi there, I think it's like, that's a Korean kicker they have. He's cool. He's been not as, automatic as he's been, in the past, but he's had ups and downs, but he's a reliable kicker. Like, I think groupie when the games are the line, they're going to make it.
I know it's only 3 games in the season, but it's only a 17-game season. You're going to be almost a fourth of the way through after the Atlanta game. Then you look ahead. You got Kansas City, then Tampa Bay, then you come back Thursday night against Denver. If you had to look at that Bobby Hebert crystal ball and see on Thursday, October 17th, coming into the Dome to take on Sean Payton Thursday night against the Colts, where do you think the Saints are?
I'm hoping, and I think it's going to happen, because 4-2.
Okay.
4-2, and I expect us to beat the Broncos and be 5-2. So at worst, I would say 3-3 going into that the Denver game. But I still think, I'm telling you, we're going to be hovering, like a lot of NFL teams, around 500. The NFL loves all this parity.
Mm-hmm. They do.
There's not, like, to get the double-digit wins, you might think it sounds drastic, but 10-7 and 7-10 is not that much difference.
You
go look at the handful of plays that occur. But boy, it sure is. Everybody's going to get fired if you're 7-10. Then if you're 10-7, everyone's optimistic.
You know, I'm going to ask you, do you think from when you played, injuries are becoming more prevalent? Is it because they're more concerned about injuries than they used to be? Is it because of the longer season? Is it because of the physics of bigger, faster, stronger? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, the physics, that could come in bigger, faster, stronger. But concern, I think, a lot of times the money was involved, so, I mean, you have to play hurt or to mm-hmm. get somebody else. And then concussions, like Devontae Smith, who he knocked out. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a brutal hit. The Eagles receiver. But in the past, he might be playing this weekend, where now he might be out a whole month. So, I think they're trying to make the game safer, but it is, a violent sport. But when I look at the 17 games, Tommy, in the early 80s, and those was the USFL, and there was a lot of NFL players like Reggie White and all them, Steve Young, Jim Kelly, we played 18 games. We played 18 games in the spring and the summer. So, listen, the money's always going to control that.
Yep.
But I just think now the 24/7, how it's instant, social media and all that, we find out more about injuries to the public in general and compared to maybe what might be hidden, the injury report. But now with gambling and fantasy football and all that, well, they're treating that as like almost you can't do drugs or gambling, I should say, before they had that legal.
Like a state secret.
You better not be lying on that injury report.
Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate it as always, man. Take it easy. We'll talk to you again soon, Bobby Hebert. We'll take a break, come back, find out what Newell Norman's got planned today on WWL.